Hey there, John Corrales here of MassLive.com. I am their Boston Celtics beat reporter. Thank you for joining me on a Tuesday Locked On Celtics. Sorry, no Millie's open. Still working on resurrecting the production elements that I've lost. That's going to take a little bit of time. I've got to redo a couple of things now that that other laptop has died. Oh well, so be it. Today we've got a special crossover with Locked On Raptors. I wish you'd do a Locked On Rappers podcast. I think that would be fun. I would do the old school version, but Locked On Raptors is the actual crossover. I'm not editing that out. I'm leaving that in. Vivek Jacob is one of the hosts of Locked On Raptors, and we sat down for a nice long conversation about game one, what we expect for game two, and let's just dive into that.
All right, Vivek, let's just dive right into this conversation. Obviously, game one did not go the way Raptors fans had hoped. What was the biggest issue that you saw for the Raptors in game one?
I think the biggest issue, and it's something that has been a concern heading into this series, has been the inability to get into the transition offense and create some easy buckets. And something the Celtics have limited in the four games during the season. It's something they did a great job of limiting here. I mean, there were turnovers on the Celtics' part, but they are the number one transition defense team in the league, and it showed. And I think for the Raptors, it's such an important part of what they do. They're one of the best transition offenses in the league. You look at the way Siakam and Norman Powell, the way those guys get going, they do like to get those easy baskets and fuel their offense with their defense. And so their inability to do that in this game, I think, is the biggest concern and the biggest thing that stood out to me.
Yeah, and I wonder, because it's funny that I, after the game, thought, wow, that transition defense was pretty good. I listened to the Locked On Raptors podcast, and you guys were talking about how that transition defense was pretty good. Brad Stevens did not think the transition defense was pretty good. If you look at the box score, he said, if you look at the box score, it's 7 fast break points for the Raptors. And Brad Stevens in our Monday media availability was like, basically, I don't know who keeps those stats. It was a bad day for that person, because our stats basically had it at like 30. and I think for people who are wondering, like, why the hell could that be 30 versus 7? I think the official explanation of a fast break point is, once you secure a rebound or get a steal, you have 6 seconds. If you score within 6 seconds, that's a fast break point. Mm-hmm. I think what Brad Stevens was looking at, and when you look at it that way, yeah, the Celtics were able to kind of stifle that.
Yeah,
we stop watching after that, but the Celtics look at that and say, okay, well, you stopped that, but did that penetration lead to another shot? And it did a lot, and especially off of missed Celtic shots, the Raptors did a pretty good job of getting out in transition off of Celtics' misses. I think they had a 136 offensive rating off of Celtics' missed shots in game one. So while we look at things as saying Celtics' transition defense was good, well, it can be a lot better. So I'm sure that does not make you feel good when you look at that game and the Celtics are sitting there saying, yeah, that defense could be a lot better and we've got to step it up.
Yeah, I also wonder how much of that is Brad Stevens understanding that's such a big part of winning this series, that he's got to keep his team on their toes. And, you know, they can't sort of pat themselves on the back and think, okay, we've got it down, where, you know, we know how to control
sure.
this series.
Sure, yeah.
And so I think there is some of that involved. You know, you can even go back to before game one, when he said that isolation wasn't going to get it done. And when you look at this game, the way they went to Kemba and the way they went to Tatum, you know, I thought they went to exactly what most people would have expected. And so I think, you know, I think part of that is you've got two great coaches that are going to play the mind games and are going to keep people guessing. And so I do think, you know, by all means, the Celtics will believe that they can do it better. There's always room for improvement in that regard. But, you know, when I look at the Raptors' identity, when I see the type of baskets that usually gets Pascal Siakam going, that usually gets the Norman Powell going, those transition threes that Fred VanVleet is able to get. None of that really happened. And so I think for the Celtics, they'll feel really good about that because of the fact that they've been able to do it now consistently. This wasn't a one-off. They've done it over the course of the season series and the regular season. And beyond that, you know, when you look at being able to take away the transition opportunities, once you get the Raptors into a half court, I think those Celtics will be pretty happy to take Siakam posting up on Jaylen Brown over and over. I think they'll take that as a win as long as he's not coming downhill running at them.
Yeah, I would say so. In fact, if they go to a Pascal post up early, I would say the very first thing I would, if I'm coaching, I'd say pull the chair. I think right away, because he's going to want to score that so badly that he's going to really want to like drop that shoulder and really pound his way to the basket. So I would tell whoever's guarding him, if it's Jaylen, very first possession, take that first hit, and as he bears down for that second one, pull the chair back off and see if you can get that traveling call on him and see if you can get him into that, like, oh, here we go again. Because if he screws up that first post up, then that immediately sets the tone of like, oh, my God. So I hope, from a Celtics perspective, that they go to that Pascal post up right away, because if I'm thinking it, they're thinking it. That's going to be one of the first moves that you do, because you know he vehemently wants to get that bucket and get himself going. I'm curious to see what they do in the half court, if the Celtics are indeed able to stop that transition.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto's half court offense has not been particularly good all year. They thrive off of the transition.
Yeah.
What do they do to get Lowry and Siakam going? Those are two guys. I'm really not worried about Fred VanVleet, right?
Like, no.
I don't think, especially that. Did you see the video of him with his kids? You must have.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that video, I look at that video, I'm like, man, VanVleet's going to be like 8-for-12 from three tomorrow. So I'm not worried about that. But yeah. I should say I am worried about that from a Celtics perspective. But what do the Raptors do to get Lowry and Siakam going? They're their number one and number two guys. They have to go out there and be the big-time scorers. How do the Raptors get those two going if it's going to be – it can't just be Siakam post-ups.
No, absolutely not. And I think the way to get them going, again, is with Siakam – to not have him posting up Jaylen Brown every time. I think he's at his best when he's facing up and when he's, you know, using his shiftiness at his size, at his length, to have that shiftiness and to have the handle where he can use a couple of fakes and get to the basket. I think that's when he's at his best. And so whether it's a question of running, some stagger screens for him to get the right matchup, and take advantage of that, I think that's something they've got to look into. I think Kyle Lowry, more catch and shoot opportunities where he's again coming off the curl. I think that's something that can help him get going. And I think the most encouraging thing for me for Kyle Lowry in that game was the fact that there seemed to be no ill effects of the ankle. I think that was something Raptors fans were wondering going in, what the condition of the ankle was going to be. And, maybe that was a little benefit of the boycott that we saw with him getting 3 days of extra rest, because it didn't seem to impact him at all. And so I expect Kyle Lowry to be much better. Again, with Fred VanVleet, he's someone you expect to shoot a better percentage. I frankly think he's been the best Raptor in the bubble so far through the seeding games and the playoffs. And so I expect him to be much better.
More on the Raptors game two expectations, game one, what happened with Vivek, in just a moment. First, rockauto.com is the most convenient place for you to go if you need anything for your car. Do not go to one of those strip mall chain auto parts stores, because there's a good chance they're not going to have what you're looking for if you need a part for your car, or what they have is a very limited kind of selection. Go to rockauto.com. You can plug all the information in yourself. That's going to save you the time of driving to this place and just doing the same thing that person behind the counter is doing. and then you can find exactly what you want. Why would you choose to spend 30 to 50 to 100% more for the exact same auto parts at one of these chain stores or a dealership? That's worse. You can spend a lot of money there. You can save a lot by going to Rock Auto. They don't have different price tiers for professional mechanics or do-it-yourselfers. They do not have different prices based on what the market will bear. What you see is what you get, and you get a lot at rockauto.com. It's a family business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. So no matter how complicated the piece is that you need, no matter how simple the thing is that you need, if everything from motor oil to something to fix your engine, you can get it at rockauto.com. And if you go there right now, you can see all the parts available for your car or truck right locked on in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know we sent you. That's a very important thing to help just make sure they know that we sent you right locked on in their How Did You Hear About Us box. It's amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
But beyond that, I think Marc Gasol in the starting role has got to win the matchup with Daniel Theis, because you expect the Celtics to have the advantage across the wing positions. And if the Raptors have Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka at the center position and can't, if they play to a draw or a loss going up against Daniel Theis and Robert Williams, all due respect to them, then I don't see how the Raptors can win the series.
Yeah, that's a big one, because if you put them together, Theis and Williams combined for 23 points and 20 rebounds, which that's a pretty hefty win for the Celtics. Because what was the combination? I never even looked at the combination of Ibaka and Gasol. What was that, 22?
Yeah, I thought Ibaka, he honestly got off to a very strong start. He had 12 points right off the top.
Yeah.
But then he kind of faded. He finished with 15.
Right.
And so I think, you know, if you look at the overall numbers of someone putting up 15 and 9 off the bench, that looks very impressive. But he really tapered off after that initial burst that he gave the Raptors in the late first quarter, early second. And with Marc Gasol, this is the worst I've seen him look defensively in a Raptor uniform. He looked far too slow, was misreading you know, the dribble drive penetration. There was the three by Kemba Walker to end the half that I thought was sort of a mini dagger, if you want to call it that, because I thought the Raptors were doing some good things to end the half there, maybe give themselves some momentum going into the second half. And the complete miscommunication for Marc Gasol to not step out there to contest that shot, I thought it told the story of his game. And I think another thing that we have to look into is Marc Gasol is supposed to be someone that can help spread the floor at the five. And in the bubble so far, through the seeding games and the playoff games, he's shooting 23% from three. And for someone who shot 37, 38% on the season, that is now a shot that maybe, you know, Daniel Theis doesn't have to respect as much, that Robert Williams, when he's on the floor matched up against him, doesn't have to respect as much. And again, when you're able to clog up the paint and recover the way the Celtics can, I think it makes life very difficult for the Raptors' half-court offense.
Let me ask you something. Mm-hmm. What happened to skinny Marc Gasol?
Yeah, that seemed to taper away pretty quickly. And I wonder, you know, you look at what he's able to bring regularly. When you look at when he was in Memphis and then what he did with Toronto last season, did he need to lose? He doesn't feel like he's lost too much weight. If anything, he's just more toned. But I just wonder what he's lost by not being his usual self and just being able to body people a bit more. And, you know, who knows? Maybe the week off was something that is going to affect him at 35 years old more than it does you know, say Jason Tatum in his early 20s. Sure. So I think that's something that we can look at going forward. But that three-point shot, when he's got it, he's got to take it. And again, the other issue with Marc Gasol is he's unselfish to a fault. He's always looking to keep the Raptors' offense humming, just looking for the next pass, the next play. But I think this is where the Celtics sort of play mind games with him a little bit and sort of say, hey, we're going to give you that shot. we're going to dare you to be a scorer because we'll live with that, as opposed to, you know, you teeing up a Pascal Siakam or an OG Anunoby for a layup, or a Kyle Lowry three-pointer, or a Fred VanVleet three-pointer. We'll live with you shooting it until you make us pay you that respect. And so I think there's a bit of that going on as well. And we saw, frankly, that some of that happened last year when the Raptors were trailing 0-2 to Milwaukee and people wanted Marc Gasol out of the starting lineup. And again, I think that's something that's going to be in play here because of the quickness of the Celtics. And if Marc Gasol, you know, can't recover as quickly, and I think, you know, you maybe have to look at as well the possibility of sort of trying to cheat on defense and having maybe a Marc Gasol match up with a Marcus Smart maybe. And then you have OG Anunoby matching up with Daniel Theis. And I think that might, when you're switching actions, I think it might help him out just a little bit.
So you think that putting Gasol on Smart would be one of their answers?
It would essentially be sort of a pseudo drop coverage where, you know, you're going to just chase. Obviously, you're not going to do it right off the top, but I think as the actions evolve, I think Marc Gasol can just sort of hover. I will say the one thing that did surprise me, and I don't know if it surprised you, I don't expect Marcus Smart to go 5 for 9 every night in this series from three.
And so, no, certainly not 5 of 9. Like that's a little crazy, but Marcus Smart's shooting, I know there's probably a little bit of perception because, you know, it takes a year or two for perceptions to change. Mm-hmm. You know, Marcus Smart is hitting three-pointers is not unusual. He set the single-game record for right. The Celtics with, I don't know, like 13. I forget however many it was. It felt like it was like 40 of them.
Yeah.
But his shooting has gone up significantly. Yeah. I'm just going to look it up real quick over the past couple of years for Marcus Smart. Let me just pop this up real quick. 36%, 36.5% last year, just about 35, 34.7% this year. So like slightly below league average, but still, you know, enough to be a threat. So
yeah.
5 of 9, no, but I mean, he might have another 5 three-pointer game in him this series, especially
right.
Now this is the other thing. The Raptors, it's so weird the way their defense runs. They're so good at getting to and from spots on the mm-hmm. on the defensive end that they allow the most three-pointers from the corner.
Yeah.
Than any other team.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they were like 7th, I think the number is, in opponent 3-point field goal percentage
right.
from the corners. So they managed to go out and contest those 3-pointers, even though they're giving up the 3-pointers.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like they were quite contesting in game one. They weren't getting out to those spots. There were a couple, like Marcus Smart hit one in the first quarter against VanVleet, where
yeah.
he was kind of fading to the right. VanVleet threw his arms up, almost like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah. Yeah.
But so when Marcus Smart's going, he's going to have those kinds of shots. If you're going to allow him some of those easy early ones, then mm-hmm. you're going to allow him to get hot. And
right.
then when Marcus Smart's like, he rides the train, you know, when he hits a couple, he's ready to start firing.
Yeah. No, I should be clear that, you know, it's not like the Raptors are trying to give up open shots here in terms of changing the matchups and whatever it may be. I think it's just sort of, when you look at a Jaylen Brown and what they can do, what he can do off the dribble, when you look at what a Jason Tatum can do off the dribble, when you look at what Kemba Walker can do off the dribble, who presents the least threat? To me, that's a Marcus.
Yeah, right.
And so when I look at, again, when Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum all season, they've led the team in pick and roll actions and possessions in the pick and roll, I'm saying OG Anunoby is the Raptors' best on-ball defender. he needs to be involved in those actions. And so whether you start him on Tatum or whether you start him on Daniel Theis, I think that is the question. I think Fred VanVleet is best suited to match up with Kemba Walker. I think the Raptors went to Kyle Lowry against Jason Tatum in this game, but I think moving forward, there shouldn't be an issue with him defending a Jaylen Brown. I think the challenges are similar, and Lowry, at his position, he's one of the best defenders in the league. And so that's where I look and wonder if maybe there's a way for Marc Gasol to, with his smarts, to understand that he can impact the game a bit more that way.
Now, one thing that stood out to me after the game and in the Monday press conferences from Nick Nurse, he made it pretty clear last night, and he said it again on Monday, that mentally they weren't there. Mm-hmm. And I certainly don't want to say that he's blaming the social justice stuff for everything. But I'm also not saying he's not doing that in some way.
Right.
I'll read today's quote, the Monday quote.
Sure.
We weren't running hard back. We weren't running hard forward. We weren't cutting hard. There was a speed and energy problem that I think was a physical problem, which I think was created by our mental state, which wasn't right. Mm-hmm. And now he said that yesterday, that mentally we weren't there. And maybe it is a residual effect. Look, I'm also not going to minimize the residual effect that, you know, these guys having fought for what they're fighting for might have had, and, you know, might be exacerbated by some bubble fatigue. What do you make of what he was saying there? And now that we saw, I brought up the Fred VanVleet video. Some of these guys have got family coming in. Maybe there's a change of pace mentally that we can expect.
Yeah, you know, I think when I look at that performance from the Raptors relative to what we've seen of them in the bubble, what we've seen of them on the season as a whole, there was definitely a lack of the crispness that I usually associate with them, and the chemistry and sort of the cerebral understanding that they all seem to have for each other on the defensive end of the floor. And so part of that, in my opinion, is also the fact that they've now just suddenly gone from playing the Brooklyn Nets for four games, a very shorthanded Brooklyn Nets, to now playing a very, very good Celtics team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a bit of sort of the, you know, that wake-up call in terms of, okay, this is a vastly different level of opponent that we're facing now. And, you know, maybe I don't want to say you pick up bad habits playing a much weaker opponent, but the degree to which you have to execute maybe doesn't have to be as sharp. And so while Philadelphia was also missing Ben Simmons, I do think, you know, that they are a much better team than the Brooklyn Nets. And so I think the Celtics were more ready in game one. I think the Raptors will be much better in game two. I think the Celtics will be up for it. I think this is a really tough matchup for the Raptors. And I think we're in for a really tight game in game two.
So I spent a lot of time in yesterday's podcast trying to figure out what was sustainable, what's not.
Mm-hmm.
So going into game two, like I think we both expect Fred VanVleet shooting to come back to some degree. Like, just you cannot expect him to go 2-for-11 again.
No.
But there are elements of this that, who knows, maybe the Celtics do have something figured out. Like, the Celtics have played Toronto twice now in the bubble. Toronto mm-hmm. hasn't led at all in either game.
Yeah.
That also, I don't think, is sustainable. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to get three more wire-to-wire wins from the Celtics. But that also has to be, like, disconcerting. So what now? What do you think the Raptors can actually do? And what do you think the Celtics are doing that you're just like, shit, what we have to make an adjustment?
Right. I think outside of the impeccable transition defense that the Celtics play that Brad Stevens would like to see level up even further. I think Boston's switchability is a big factor as well. I think when you look at Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, they have no issues switching on to whoever it may be. And I think when you look at the Raptors' offense, they depend so much on ball movement and just playing off of each other that switchability kind of takes away from that. And when you're not able to really create a mismatch off of those actions, then that's where, you know, all of a sudden you're looking at the clock and it's down to six and someone's got to hoist up a shot. And so I think the big thing is keeping the Celtics on their toes. So even if the Raptors go to a post up to Pascal Siakam, guys can't be standing around the way they were in game one. There's got to be actions happening off the ball where people are screening for each other. People are cutting to the basket. People are, you know, sort of flashing away to the three-point line. And I think those types of things are the adjustments that we can see. And, you know, frankly, that's not a – I don't even know if you call that an adjustment. That's just, frankly, just playing a lot better and being a lot more in tune with the game. And, yeah, to me, it was a very uncharacteristic Raptors performance. Part of that definitely has to be credited to the Celtics because while I think the Raptors generally do a great job of taking away their opponent's identity, I thought the Celtics did that to the Raptors in this game by taking away so much of what makes them successful. So I expect the Raptors to come out hard in this game. And to your point that you made earlier about, you know, maybe drawing that early foul on Siakam, that for sure will play on his mind because, let's face it, he had the three early fouls in game one. So he's certainly not trying to get into that situation here in game two. So we'll see. I'm curious what your thoughts were on the officiating early, where I feel like these are two teams that really like to get into each other and be physical. And I thought the refs really just weren't having that.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of those calls, like, I didn't think any calls were egregiously bad. I thought there might have been a couple, like the first Siakam foul where he was fighting through the screen, I thought that was a little tough one. That one, it's one of those, it's a foul, but really? And he turned to the ref, and I remember, he's like, oh, come on now. Like, that's, I think, that one was a tough one.
It's just one of those where, you know, you call that, if you call that one, you're basically going to have to call it every time down the floor.
Yeah, that one was tough. I forget what the second one was. The third one where he got Jaylen Brown's elbow.
Right.
Was that one was an automatic, that's an automatic call. When you hit a shooter on the elbow, even though it didn't really affect his shot, as soon as you touch anywhere on that shooting arm, that's going to be called.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's whatever. I thought there were definitely some, like a couple that were maybe on the softer side, but they were still fouls.
Yeah.
But you could certainly make the argument that generally speaking in the playoffs, those don't typically get called.
Yeah, and listen, I'm not saying it one way either, right? I feel like there were things that the Celtics were doing that they usually, you know, are able to do. And I thought that the refs were calling that too. I just think the overall physicality for the game wasn't quite in line with what the nature that these two teams usually play with.
So what I will say is that I do think the types of fouls that Toronto was committing do fall in line with what Nurse was saying. When you're not there mentally, your closeout is a little less disciplined. Right. So for Siakam, if you're not there mentally, you're not aware. You're not spatially aware. Like you get a little too close to Jaylen Brown's airspace and you commit a foul that, look, you've got two fouls. That's a silly one to commit on a closeout on a three-pointer. And now, granted, we've seen a ton of three-point shooters getting fouled more recently. That's just something that's happening more in the NBA.
Right.
But that's kind of a dumb foul. That's a foul that, you know, when you look at it on film, I can imagine him sitting there going, yeah, I shouldn't have, you know, mm-hmm. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Lowry committed one where he got way up into Jaylen Brown making the pass. He landed kind of like underneath Jaylen Brown. There's a disciplined closeout. There's a disciplined get up like within a certain area. And they kept getting like 2, 3, 4 inches, like past that area,
right,
to the point where it's like, it's a foul, not 6 inches past where it's obvious. It's like 3 or 4 inches past that spot where you're like, oh, this is a tough one. I have to call it, you know? Right. That's where I think where Nick Nurse was, that's where it makes the most sense, where he says our heads weren't there.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And then I think, you know, with the first quarter, you know, having 11 fouls called, I think that sort of took away that the aggression that they could bring.
Sure.
Going forward from there. And so I think there were moments where they were kind of working their way back into it. And then, you know, I think the Celtics were just too good. I think it was an afternoon game.
We always say night. Every NBA game happens at night, no matter what time that day.
So on the day, I thought for the most part, the Celtics were extremely connected on the court. They just didn't look like a team that was off for as long as everyone was off. They looked like they were in their usual rhythm, in their usual stride. And frankly, the ceiling that they showed in this game to me was higher than I would have imagined without Gordon Hayward.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where you stand on that.
Well, I will say that the Celtics have the two things working in their favor. One, they've spent the entire season making up for the loss of somebody. They just have not been healthy. They had Smart, Kemba, Jalen, Jason, Gordon healthy for something like 5 games or something like that. Like it was a ridiculous, I forget the exact number was. Now they were playing better together in the seeding games, but even then Kemba had a minutes restriction. So they're kind of used to playing like this. The other thing they have in their favor is it's the playoffs. And in a unique playoff situation where they're not traveling, they can play their 40 some odd minutes. So instead of, and we still saw a little bit of Brad Wanamaker, we still saw a little bit of Semi Ojeleye, and any minutes the Celtics can get with those guys that are positive is a big plus. But the Celtics can ride Tatum and Brown and Kemba to a much greater degree than they did in the regular season. So they have the chance to make up for the loss of Gordon just by giving their main guys more minutes and getting some little bit of production from other players whenever they can. I thought Ojeleye did a pretty good job in his minutes against Siakam.
Mm-hmm.
I thought losing Gordon was going to be a much bigger deal. And it may still prove to be a much bigger deal. Like game one is game one. It's one game. We'll see how that goes. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a point in the second quarter. I mean, in the second game here where we say, oh shit. Yep. That's where we needed Gordon Hayward right there, because Toronto's picked it up and this is where we could use him in the middle of a zone or something like that.
That's exactly, because that's the thing, right? Playoffs are all about matchups. And, you know, I think with Gordon Hayward in the mix, I probably would have picked the Celtics to win in 6. And I switched. Like, I thought Hayward's injury was significant enough where I then was thinking Raptors in 7 because mm-hmm. of the way, you know, let's face it, Nick Nurse likes to play a lot of zone defense. And I thought Hayward's injury was going to open that up for them to do it at least a bit more. Obviously, there's still ball handling in the form of Jason Tatum and Kemba Walker and Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown. But I just thought that would open up the floor to change things up with the zone. And we saw a bit of it in game one. After the Celtics took that big lead, Nick Nurse turned to a zone and he was able to get some momentum going for the Raptors for a little bit with that zone. And so I think when the Celtics are shooting, you know, 43% from three, in as they did in game one, the zone defense isn't going to have too much of an effect. But if they come back down to earth a little bit in game two, then I think that's where, again, with a zone buster like Hayward and his ability to create off the dribble and pull up in that mid-range, I think that's where things can open up for the Raptors defensively.
Yeah, it'd be curious to see how the Celtics combat the zone. Celtics have had some troubles with zones throughout the course of the season. Be interesting if Robert Williams, if he can help with the zone pick and rolls with
were you Boston. Surprised by that at all? No playing time for Enes Kanter really, and just riding
no. Robert Williams. Hmm. No, that I think most people who cover the Celtics kind of expected this to play out like this. Yeah. That Robert Williams was going to get the majority of the backup minutes, mm-hmm. and only if he was just god awful would Enes Kanter be in as a kind of like we have no choice. But I think most of us in Boston wouldn't be surprised if Enes Kanter didn't play a single second in this series. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody would be surprised, just because if you put Enes Kanter in there, you're going to pick and roll him to death. Like the number one Nick Nurse adjustment would be to hypnotize Brad Stevens into putting Enes Kanter in. But if he could somehow get that, then that would be the he would, yeah. You know, he win a second coach of the year just for that.
So. No question. Yeah, I think beyond that, the only other adjustment I'd leave for the Raptors, we saw the big lineup where they went to both Serge and Marc Gasol. I think there's the potential just to speed things up for them if Nick Nurse isn't able to get the pace that he's looking for to go super small and have potentially OG Anunoby at center or Pascal Siakam at center and play with Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, and Norman Powell and see what that looks like.
That's not a lot of size on the court, I'll tell you that much.
No.
You know, I think that would just – that would probably mean Jason Tatum post-ups, like, all over the place.
Right.
And then we'll see from there. But I think Jason Tatum could feast on the post and just hit his little turnaround fadeaways. But, look, anytime you lure the other team into post-ups and get away from the ball movement, then that tends to work out in the defense's favor, because post-ups have a tendency to be inefficient. But I still think that the Celtics with their size can shoot over the top of a lot of those defenders. Mm-hmm. And who knows? Maybe, but look, I don't think going too big is going to be the answer for Toronto either.
Right.
All right. Well, we'll see. We're gonna have to wrap it up here, but we'll see. You know, a lot of good stuff here to think about ahead of game two. So I expect it to be a lot tougher game. Like I said before, like I've been saying since the post-game podcast, I expect the Raptors players to come out and play a lot better. Now, the Celtics might still be able to do a lot of the things that they've done, but I still think that we can expect a much tougher fight out of the Raptors. Vivek, please tell people where they can find you on social media.
You can find me on social media at Vivek and Jacob. That's my plug for Twitter. And, yeah, I'll be doing my usual writing for Raptors Republic and Complex Canada as well. So that's where you can find my written work besides listening to me on the Locked On Raptors.
Cool. Vivek, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Hope you've enjoyed that conversation with me and Vivek Jacob. Make sure you follow him and go check out his stuff to keep up with the Raptors side of things. Follow Locked On Raptors, and they're going to give you some insight on things you might not have heard of or thought of, you know, coming from me. From the Locked On Celtics perspective, it's, you know, you want to get that different side as we roll on through the playoffs. So please subscribe to them. Subscribe, obviously, to this podcast. If you're new here, if you're coming over from the Raptors, you're one of these Raptors fans, check out Locked On Celtics. Subscribe so you can get the Celtics point of view. Regular listeners, those 5-star ratings and good written reviews are always very helpful. And I thank you for doing that. And thank you for listening to this Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.